Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hi, everyone. Wow, we've got an episode for you. We might be joined by a special guest. I won't tease it too much. You'll figure it out, but let me tell you what, you're going to be happy.
You're going to be happy.
You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it. Before we get into all of that, that great episode, that great Sammy retelling, we have some people we need to shout out. And look, it's been a minute. We've been having babies. We've been living life. And it's been a minute since we have said the names of these people who have supported us on the Patreon, who we love so much. And we are very excited right now to give them the moment they deserve to have their names be said, and said their names will be. And we are going to start off with some new champions for actors rights. Wow. Absolutely love to see it. Love to have them here. It is freaking exciting. I can't wait to say their names, and their names are Abby Coy, Catherine Gooden LaJoy, and Tracy.
Woo.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for championing the rights of actors everywhere.
Important work.
And we love you. And another person doing very important work is our newest vessel head. All aboard to this perfect vessel head, Cam Barber. We are so glad to have you. Thank you for all that you do. We love you as much as you love vessels, which we hope is a lot.
We hope is a lot, Cam. Hope you've checked out that video of the Titanic sinking in real time as a vessel head. I know you're going to love it. And boy, oh boy, do we have quite a few new members of Toni fucking Collette's inner circle. And who can blame them? It's fucking great here. Toni's here. Oof. It's the place to be.
It's the place to be. And I can't blame a single one of them.
And boy, oh boy, I'm excited to read all of these names. Buckle up, guys. There's a lot. Here we go. We have Ben R., Lisa Nachtman, Rachel Smith, Amanda Salinas, Kelly Tarquini, Margaret Morris, Kenner Dillon, Katrina, Matt Brody, Paku Herr, Ann Kacharski, Aaron Martin, Hallie Walker, Holly Freeman, Katie, Seamus Dowling, Laura Wilkinson, Natalie Strickland, Jacob Anderson, Shayna Rin, Kira Murphy, Kristen, Evie Canabridge, Daniel Carroll, Matthew Laverty, Jean Delaney, Megan B., Carrie Buchanan, Janine Fitzgerald, and Claire Eagle. Holy freaking smokes.
Oh my freaking smokes.
Oh my smokes.
Oh my smokes. What the heck? Welcome. Wow.
Welcome one, welcome all. This circle is just growing and growing, and don't be fooled. It's still as tight knit as ever.
It is intimate.
It's intimate. It's growing, but intimate.
Exactly. It is that perfect balance of social and intimate.
Exactly.
You know, it's the party you want to be at. It's the circle you want to be a part of. We are so, so grateful to have you all here. And we love you.
We love you.
Unconditionally. And we also got to say we love a couple of dear friends who have upgraded their Patreon experience. We're thrilled to see it. Thrilled to have them here. They are Anna Galbraith and Alex Creary.
Woo!
Thank you so much for letting us say your name again as you venture deeper into the Patreon world.
We love you.
We love you unconditionally.
Unconditionally, forever. And if you, listener, are not a patron yet and you would like to be, you may become one by going to patreon.com/TSDW podcast. We got trailer reactions for you. We got bonus episodes. We've got a bonus episode coming up this week on The Mist, which is a fucking crazy movie. You're gonna want to hear about it. Or, you know, if you don't, we still love you. So
we still love you. Pressure. We have another episode, a regular one that you're going to listen to. If you've clicked it, that's why you're here. It's what's going to happen. We think you're going to like it.
And here it is.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy.
And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies and telling these two women all about them.
Oh my god, I'm so freaking excited.
You guys, I almost forgot what to say in the beginning. I had a momentary lapse.
Hey,
I
was it's like, just your name.
It's just exactly what you say, Emily, and then I say it right after you. And it makes me so happy to be back on the pod. It's been just too long, you guys.
To be saying those magical words again.
Oh, they fill me with life. They fill me with joy. My cup has been refilled.
Oh, thank God.
Wait, how many did I miss? Do you guys even know? I don't even know how many.
Three?
I missed.
Two? Not that many, to be completely honest.
Okay, not that many,
but a couple, yeah. A couple. Bonus episode and two regulars, maybe?
Only two regulars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, I'm really happy to be back. I missed you guys so much, and I have a baby now. The baby is here. He has arrived.
He's arrived.
His name is Silas. He's really tiny.
He's so tiny.
He's very floppy. It took a while to get used to holding him without feeling like I was just going to kill him the second I touched him.
Yeah, that's the only time I've held babies. It's like, well, I'm about to kill this baby because I don't have that a long amount of practice, so I can relate to that first feeling.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's gonna die in my hands.
He's gonna die in my hands. Babies' heads are also not like hard, so because they need to be soft so they can come out of your body easier. Mm-hmm. And so their heads are like squishy, so that doesn't help because you're like, I'm just definitely gonna murder this baby by
accident. Because you have to hold their head, but then it's a soft little head, so it's like, hold it but not too much.
They're actually very strong. It's all in your head. They're very resilient.
Right.
I like when they're in the, I call it the little like tree frog stage, when they're just like, they just like grip onto you like a little tree frog and just flop in because there's nothing else they can do. And I'm saying this as the person who has not ever had, I like holding other people's, because I think as a parent, it's the worst stage ever because you don't sleep and it's impossible. But for me, love it.
Yeah, I really wish we were in the same city, you guys, so you could come over and hold him. That would make me so happy.
I wish that so bad.
So soon. Badly. So badly. I know soon, because I'm also I'm getting married in September, and you guys shall meet him then. And I can't wait.
I can't fucking wait.
Cute and tiny and perfect.
Silas.
Wow.
Silas.
I love him so goddamn much.
Silas God. Ralph Hamlin. But catch me up on what I missed. Tell me how you guys are.
What's up with us? Far less eventful past couple of weeks. What I was going to talk about today is that I've gotten very... You guys know I love a project, and I will, like... You know, my thing was doing clay for a while. It still sort of is. But then I was like, no, I sew now. And I'm going to just make clothes and sew. And now my thing is sewing. And it's still both of those things. But my next thing, which is sort of related, I have in the past few days gotten so into dyeing clothes and fabric.
Mm.
Rit dye is what I've been using. It's fucking cheap. It's so easy. There are a million colors. The whole world becomes your oyster. I am obsessed. I can't stop. It happened because a client at our salon came in and she's like, I just dyed a dress of mine, did like a dip dye. And she showed me a picture and I was like, oh, what a cool idea. I have this dress that's like a white, it's off-white, silky, and it just looks so like bridal. Like it just looks and I never know what to wear it with, but it's like if the fit is nice. So I was like, oh, I'll dye that dress. And then I was like, I'll dye everything. And I have every white thing that I own. I'm like, just kidding, it's not white anymore, it's a color, and I'm gonna do this. Then I dyed napkins, I bought a tablecloth and dyed it.
Did you dye the shirt you're wearing right now?
Yes, Henley! You better fucking believe it. Because this one came out too pink. This is one of my first ones, because different fabrics take the dye in different ways. But so what my first round was, I had things, a few things that were white, but like stained or just dingy. And you can like, you know,
mess around with them.
I don't wear this anymore, so let's just see what the deal is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the world's your oyster. To an extreme degree, it's not good because I won't stop. And now it's like I'm running out of things. I'm like, I guess I could dye this. I guess I don't love the color that this is. So
well, you
I'm
should
just,
sell
like, going
them.
Crazy.
I feel like
I might.
You had such success with the earrings, and I feel like why not make this a full shop, one stop shop for your clothing, for your earrings, for your tablecloths, and your napkins.
I really might. I keep saying I'm going to put together a little like summer market situation and try to sell some stuff, because I've also been making a lot of clothes, but I just keep making I'm making stuff for me and for Joel and for friends. And it's so cheap. It's so easy. They give you tips for how to get your dye consistently. You could do tie dye if you want. Like this that I'm wearing right now is like a little more tie dye, but this I want to just be consistent. It's easy to do. It doesn't take that long. You don't need that many materials. And you can make something new again. Do you know what I mean? And it's more economical. You know, instead of getting rid of something, you turn into something new,
sustainable,
better for the environment. It's freaking great. It's so great, and I'm really obsessed with it now. And so, get ready for that to be my new thing.
I love it.
Hell yeah!
This is very exciting. We're gonna have to post some pics.
When I get some success stories going, I'll share them.
Yeah,
it's exciting stuff.
That is exciting stuff.
Sammy, can you fucking top that?
Absolutely not.
Can you top it?
No, I sure can't. I'm in a stage of life right now where I've finished this job. And I was telling you guys earlier that it's just now like I have no idea what I do every day. So this question of how have I been is like, I'm good, I think. Like, what have I been doing? Mostly been catching up on a lot of chores that had built up, catching up on a lot of TV, and I've been taking care of my physical and mental health more than I was when I was working nonstop. I started going to acupuncture, which acupuncture is, I really like it. I've done it before. And I find it very relaxing, but there's always like 5 moments during it where I panic and assume that I'm going to fall off the table, like in Final Destination, and all the needles are going to stab into me.
Oh my God.
So
would that like kill you if that happened?
No, I don't think
they're
that
so
it would.
Skinny.
Yeah, they're so tiny.
I think about, but that's what I think about when I'm laying on the table trying to relax. It's like, which ones will be worst? Because, and what should my, because I get a lot in my hands and feet, which stresses me out because I can't, if I'm falling, I need to remember not to put my hands out to stop myself because that'll actually be worse. So I would just need to kind of flop onto my belly where there's no needles or back.
At least you have a plan.
I do. I make a plan. And then I kind of relax for a bit and I get into it. And I'm like, listening to the little white noise machine. Like, there was a part where I felt like I was in the womb. It was really Ooh. Nice. And but then I'll be like, fuck, there's needles all over me and panic again.
I've never done it. And I feel like I would be nervous.
I've never done it either. Because I imagine like you would have a little bit of a feeling of like claustrophobia sometimes because you really are kind of trapped.
Yes, you can't move moment. Because the needles are in specific points that it doesn't feel good when you move. You can feel needles in your skin. Sometimes they're like near nerves. And so it feels like very bad to move.
Ugh, that's awful.
But it's like a good practice for me in being still because I have so much nervous energy that it's like a way for me to force myself to kind of meditate in stillness. And so it ends up being like very, very deeply relaxing with little sprinkled moments of panic. So that's kind of what I've been up to. And one other thing that I wanted to say is that I finished Loki, which is so good. And one thing it. I learned about it that's so fucking cool is that all 6 episodes, the director is a woman, Kate Herron. All 6 episodes, the cinematographer is a woman, Autumn Durald, and the composer is a woman. And those are like 3 of the big jobs. And on a fucking Marvel thing, all of those jobs being women on all 6 episodes really just made me feel really excited and
that's
pumped.
That's super cool.
And the score is so fucking good. So
the score is really, really good. Natalie. I agree. I just haven't seen the last episode. I have one more to go. I'm excited.
I loved it.
This has been my favorite Marvel TV show so far that released.
Me too.
So much better than Captain Winter Falcon. Yeah, Soldier.
Captain Winter Falcon Soldier.
That was a mess.
Captain Winter Falcon. I didn't like that one.
First of all, too many words in the title. It's chaotic.
Pick a word. And none of them are real words.
Chaotic.
Captain Winston, that's not even a title.
I'm not a big fan of Captain America in general, so I wasn't really expecting to like that one, and I didn't. So I wasn't too surprised. I liked it actually a little bit more than I thought I would based on how little I care about those characters in general. But it's definitely the worst of the 3. And I agree. I think it goes Loki, WandaVision, and then Captain Winter Maker.
Captain Winter Falcon Winter Soldier Man. That's the official title, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then another thing I did this week was I movie hopped, which can you even believe? Haven't done that since probably 2014. No,
2019.
Earlier, once assigned seating became regular, I got a little too scared of I don't like to get in trouble. I don't like to break the rules, but I did it. And the first movie I saw was this week's movie, which is Old, the greatest movie title that there ever was.
So fucking excited. Oh my God.
M. Night Shyamalan, they just give him so many tries. They're just like, I was thinking about this, like, I have no idea how you feel about this movie, Sammy. Maybe he knocked it out of the park again, finally. But it's like M. Night Shyamalan, they've been like, you know what? Let's just give him another shot. Let's just let him try one more time.
I mean, I think some of his movies make a lot of money. Like, I think Split made a lot of money.
He has a name that people know, you know?
So they're not doing it to give him any favors. They're trying to make money.
They're not being nice.
It just feels like he's had one too many shots, though. I don't know. So, okay, I'm excited to hear what you think.
His filmography is very interesting because it's so all over the place. There's some truly fantastic films and some of the absolute worst films that have ever been made. Like, The Happening is just undoubtedly one of the worst movies ever made. This one, I'd say somewhere in the middle. It's okay. So yeah, written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, based on a graphic novel by Pierre Oscar Levy and Frederick Peters, starring an ensemble cast. We got Gael Garcia Bernal, Vicky Krieps, Rufus Sewell, Alex Wolff, Thomasin McKenzie, Abby Lee, Nikki Amuka-Bird, Ken Leung, Eliza Scanlon, and Aaron Pierre. Ken Leung is that guy from Saw, who I love.
Oh yeah, quite a cast.
Yeah, it's a great cast, which is part of why I was very excited to see it. And I think I talked about it on the pod when I saw the trailer for this, because this played before A Quiet Place 2, I think, is when I first saw
this trailer.
And I was so pumped about it because this concept is so ridiculous and silly, but I'm into it.
It is cocktail hour, and this week we are keeping it simple and elegant, just like the title of this week's film. We are drinking an old fashioned. This is the Difford's Guide recipe for an old fashioned, and to make this version, you will need 1.5 ounces of bourbon, 1 ounce of rye whiskey, 1/3 ounce of Demerara sugar syrup, and 9 drops of Bob's Abbott's bitters. You will stir all ingredients with ice and strain into an ice-filled old-fashioned glass and garnish with an orange zest twist. Cheers.
Did they film it during COVID?
Yes.
Oh, they did?
Because it's like they're on like a desert island or something, right? It's like the perfect COVID setup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's some stats for us. It has a 52 on Rotten Tomatoes, a 53 on Metacritic. Very rare that Metacritic is higher than Rotten Tomatoes. 6.1 on IMDb.
There we go.
Classic.
Classic rating for IMDb. The budget was $18 million. So far, it has made $23 million. It has been out for, at the time of this recording, just 3 days. So,
okay. All right.
Pretty
all
good. Right. But bad. I mean, movies tend to make most of their money in the first 3 days. So could be better, but also, also not bad. It's already made money. So that's a good sign. It is PG-13, which I think it would have been better if it were rated R.
And
it's out. Out now in theaters. If you want to see it, that's how you got to do it. And I went to AMC. I went to one in Burbank. It has full recliner chairs. There's like a button on the side that goes full. Like you can lay almost completely horizontally to watch the movie. And I've never been in one like that before. And I loved it.
I just did that for the first time at City Walk, but not the, because the one we went to at City Walk was the IMAX. In their regular theaters, you can.
So this must be an AMC new thing.
All the way back.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of those in New York. And when one of our first dates, we went to go see Inside Out, and they had those reclining chairs. And Tim was leaning on me. And when he leaned up, it was a huge wet spot because he just cried so hard and it got all over my shirt. And it was our third date.
So it was filmed in quarantine. I think it was filmed in September of 2020. So pretty peak quarantine, peak COVID time. M. Night Shyamalan said that the subject matter of the film, in which a group of people find themselves trapped on an isolated beach dealing with a deadly phenomenon, mirrored the experience of being in lockdown and the uncertainty of the coronavirus pandemic, adding, "It was strange. We were making a film that had nothing to do with the pandemic, but at the same time, it was absolutely about this fear and uncertainty we were all feeling, the fear of infection. It made us think very deeply about death and survival and about being in lockdown. The idea of being stuck in a situation and not being able to leave," which I thought was interesting that they just kind of by chance.
Yeah.
This movie that really is not at all inspired by anything pandemic related, kind of still mirroring some of those same feelings. which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Because he obviously wrote it before.
Right. And it's based on a, yeah, it's based on a graphic novel that.
Right. Oh, I'm really excited.
I'm excited to tell you about it. Should we watch this trailer?
Yes.
Let's do it.
No kids allowed on the beach? What?
That's not true!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
Are we there yet? You said 5 minutes. Technically, it's been more than 5 minutes.
Let's just all start slowing down.
Wow. Can you believe I found this online?
I guess it's not that secret a beast.
Whoa! Who would leave this?
From the hotel! They're so rusted!
What's happening?
Found stuff from the hotel in the sand.
Ready or not,
here we come! What happened to her mom?
I don't know.
What happened to her?
Body has decomposed.
How quickly can that happen?
7 years.
But she just died.
Wait, where are the kids?
Trent!
Kara!
Come here!
Hey, have you seen my children?
Mom? I'm right here.
Dad, why are you looking at me like that?
What's happening to us?
My daughter just turned 6 2 weeks ago.
Mom!
Whatever is happening to us is happening very fast.
You have wrinkles. There's something wrong with this beach.
What's happening?
Mom! 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 I'm scared!
We have to get off this beach!
People are blacking out going this way.
If she makes it to the ledge, she might have a chance.
Why is she stopping? Why is she stopping? Kara, wake up!
Wake up!
They have to know what this place does.
I don't know!
You're lying!
Look!
What is that?
A message.
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
We're connected to something bigger.
Oh no. We're here for a reason.
Wow. Outrageous. Outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, I have to see it. I just had to.
I have to know what happens. I have to know. I cannot wait to hear what the fuck is up with this movie.
And also, if it was like really distracting watching those actors play six-year-olds, you know what I mean? Like, if you were thinking about that the whole time, like, oh, he's technically six.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you. I had some thoughts about that.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, how does she get pregnant? Like, what?
I
can't wait to find that out. She's falling asleep as she climbs up a rock. Like, what's that? The idea that the scary, like already their kids have aged like crazy, but then being like, you have wrinkles. Like,
I know, that part's so funny.
Yeah, like, also, he didn't have wrinkles up until now. Excuse me.
Yeah, like, are just the kids aging or the adults are aging, but slower, it seems?
Guys,
the kids really seem to be aging.
I'm going to answer all of these questions. I have so many questions.
It's also very funny that it's M. Night Shyamalan, director of Sixth Sense and Split. And it's like, and a lot of other crap shoots in between.
Forget M. Night Shyamalan, director
of
The
Middle.
Happening.
Also, Split, I know, is supposed to be good, but it's not nearly as good as Sixth Sense, I'm sure. And so it's funny that those are still the two. It's
you
like
need
Sixth Sense.
Something else
Split.
To say.
Yeah. I mean, Signs is better than Split for sure, but Split was a great. Vehicle for James McAvoy to do a bunch of different characters. That's
also, it would be very funny if in 2021 they're targeting you as from Signs and the Sixth Sense. It's yeah. Like, yeah. Well,
from,
That's true.
20 years ago.
It's got to do like, one.
People
one
watching this movie
one.
Weren't alive when those movies came out.
Yeah. All right.
Guys, sorry, speaking about aging, it's fine, but I went to a Dodgers game this week. And they carted us to get our beers, and the guy reading our IDs was like, "I just look for if it starts with a 19, I don't even worry about it. It's like I don't even look at the rest because
oh my
you
God,
could be born in the year 2000 and be 21 years old." And I was like, "Holy fucking shit!"
Yeah,
he's
that's
just like
crazy.
19 something. Great.
I know we had that realization like actually very recently, and it blew my mind too. It's very upsetting.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's deeply upsetting. Mm. Also, 1990 was 30 years ago. It's not okay.
It's wild. It's wild. I mean, that's like the thing that I like about this movie. It's like time passing and aging is fucking scary, and it's something that everybody
really
thinks
scary.
About. And so it's like the movie does. Going into it, I was like, it doesn't have to be great. Like I wasn't expecting it to be great. I was like, it can either be really good and I'll be happy. It can be bad and I'll be happy. Like it's just such a fun and good premise that I'm like, I just am curious to see it. Like no matter what, even if it's bad, it's still gonna make me think about these things that are scary. It's like just like the thought of death approaching faster and faster is scary.
Yeah.
So
especially when you think about like a 6-year old experience.
Yeah, right. That, like a kid losing their childhood in a second.
Oof. Yes.
It's very scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. All right.
Let's should we find fucking out. Do it?
Let's get into
Let's
it.
Let's do it.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the US, and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/too scary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
So, okay, first of all, I want to just apologize that this will be a slightly more unreliable / less detailed one than normal, just because I saw it in theaters, so it's harder to take note. I actually think I did a pretty good job, but some of this might be like slightly out of order.
That's fine. Of course, it's way harder to do it when you see it once in theaters.
Yeah,
that's totally fine. Also, I just want to know the big stuff. I'm just like, tell me what the fuck is up. Like,
yeah.
I just want to
same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got you. I got that much. Okay, so we start with a family in a van on their way to a resort. They're on some sort of tropical island. And we have a mom and dad and two kids. The mom and dad are Gail Garcia Bernal and Vicky Krieps. Their names are Guy and Prisca. And their two children are Trent and Maddox. Trent's a boy, Maddox is a girl, and Trent is younger. They look to be about 6 and 11. They actually say that they're 6 and 11 later, so that's how I know, because notoriously, otherwise, who knows what I would have guessed, but...
8. You would have guessed 8.
Yeah, that round them both to 8.
To 8,
they're both pretty close to 8, honestly.
They also don't look that different in age to me.
Yeah, I would not have guessed 11, so...
No, me either. Not at all.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So Maddox is singing and Prisca says she's kind of like nodding her head along, like she's enjoying her daughter singing, and she says, I can't wait to hear your singing voice when you're older. Like, really made me laugh. And they arrive at the resort. It's very fancy. They are greeted by the hotel resort manager and this woman that has these very strange looking cocktails. It's like, by the profile you filled out, we've chosen these specific cocktails for you, and they look very intricate, and they're just being treated very nicely and welcomed on in. And the kids go to kind of a lunch buffet. They all go to a lunch buffet, but the kids are alone at this table serving themselves, and they meet the resort manager's nephew. His name is Idlib, and Trent and Idlib are so fucking cute. It's so cute. This movie does a very good job of making you realize how precious childhood is, and these moments of these precocious little children. Like, kids just say kind of weird things. What does Idlib say? He's like, I collect conch shells. I have 42. And Trent's like, that's so cool. I do this. And this is this is my thing. And they're like, whoa, cool thing. And
like, that's so cute. It's so sincere.
Yeah.
It's so like unguarded.
Yeah, exactly. They're just like, hello.
Imagine going
here's
up
my
to someone being like, I mean, I guess I kind of do. Hi, I dye clothes now. I have 8 different pairs of clothes that I dyed.
Yeah, exactly. It's really sweet.
Online, I'll give you the link.
It's very sweet. And so Trent and Idlib like become fast friends, and after lunch the family and Idlib go out to the beach. There's kind of a pool near the beach, and all the rest of the guests are there, and Trent and Idlib are going up to each person saying, hi, I'm Trent, I'm Idlib, what's your name and what's your occupation?
And they like, oh my God, so cute.
Person to person, and kind of
what's
find
your occupation.
And I liked also the detail that he varies it from person to person. Hi, what do you do? What do you do for a living? What's your name and what do you do for a living? Some people he says, so what's cute. Your occupation? It's very cute. And like, he meets this, these three people, and they're like, think it's so freaking cute. And they're like, oh, I'm a nurse, I'm a cop, I'm a dancer. And they're just like very charming everybody on the beach, these two adorable little children. And knowing what we know, what's coming, it's just like they're really leaning into like how precious childhood is and how much you just want them to like stay that age forever.
Oh, no.
So they're already on the beach that we saw in the trailer?
No, this is a different beach. This is like the main beach. Lots of tourists here. It's a pretty crowded beach.
Got it.
And Maddox is like in a preteen phase. You can see her looking at the older, cooler kids, feeling like she wants to go over and hang out with them, but is still kind of a kid and kind of hangs with her little brother in Idlib. And she's just a little too old for them, but a little too young for the cool kids. And so she's in kind of that in-between phase. We just see that they're a pretty, a very happy, sweet family. And they go back to the room at night to get to bed. And Prisca and Guy are in their room together and they get in a little bit of a fight. And through this fight, we find out that they are actually planning to separate after this, that this is their kind of last family trip. And they start yelling at each other. And it seems that Guy wants to stay together. Prisca is done. And we also hear that she has some health problem that's kind of maybe made her want to make this change. Like she's feeling like she doesn't have as much time left perhaps or something. It's kind of vague. It doesn't give you a lot of answers yet, but we see that she has a health condition. They're separating and they're kind of yelling at each other. She says something like, you're always worried about the future. Like, why? Because he's like, well, we could do this. We could do this. She's like, you're always thinking about the future. And he's like, well, you're always stuck in the past. And like, why can't we ever just be in the present together? A lot of references to time. And we see outside of the room that Trent and Maddox are just literally right outside the door listening to this whole fight, kind of holding each other like they've probably heard similar fights before. Maddox is comforting Trent, like, it's okay, it's going to be okay. Like, we have each other, we'll stick together. And Trent remembers that he has a little note from Idlib that he pulls out, and they've made some sort of secret code language where each symbol is a different letter in the alphabet. And so he decodes this message and says, ice cream tomorrow. Like, oh, and he's all excited to see his friend Idlib in the morning. And so the next morning that night we see on the beach that we saw in the trailer, a man and a woman kind of there alone, and the woman gets naked and is looking alluringly as she like gets into the water. This is kind of just like a couple romantically having a nighttime beach time.
Love a nighttime beach time. My favorite pastime is a nighttime beach time.
The idea of swimming in the ocean after dark, kill me. Like, I can't. Are you kidding?
No. Sharks. It sounds very, very scary. I've done it.
So scary.
But it's scary. So, but we don't really see what happens. We just see that they're there. And then we cut to the next morning, breakfast back at the resort. We see some of the other people that are staying there. There's a man and a woman, Charles and Crystal. And Charles is clearly much older than Crystal. This is his wife, and they have a daughter together. He looks to be 50 and she's in her 20s. Type of thing. And his mother is also with them. And they're
Rufus Sewell.
That's Rufus Sewell. Yep. And Abby Lee is the wife. And they're ordering breakfast. And she's kind of flirting with the waiter. They give her this very Instagrammy model vibe of very vain. And she's ordering like a juice, and she's like, is it really calcium enriched? Because I have a calcium deficiency. And he's like, yes, calcium enriched. Yeah. And I don't know. She's like flirting with him, and at some point like says something to her daughter, like, sit up straight, honey. Like, men don't like it when women slouch. Like, it's just kind of this very, very looks. Yeah, it's
shallow.
Exactly. And we see at another table, a woman starts having a seizure, and her husband kind of runs to her side and just lays her on her back. And Charles, who we just saw at the other table, runs up. He's like, I'm a doctor. And they get her through her seizure. It ends. And she's like, obviously this has happened before. Her husband makes kind of a little joke, like, oh yeah, you just love being the center of attention. She laughs, and they get back to, she's like, I'm sorry, I ruined everybody's breakfast. They seem like a nice couple. This is, Ken Lung and Nikki Amuka Bird. And so we've just kind of now seen a few of the other guests, and the resort manager comes up table to table saying, you know, how's your stay so far? What are your plans for the day? And Guy and Prisca say, you know, we don't know what we're really doing today. We're kind of looking to maybe go to the beach, but we were not sure. And he says, well, I've got something for you. There's another beach that's much more private that we don't really tell everybody about. So you and your family could go there. We could have a driver take you there. And it's like a much more private beach. And they're like, ooh, that sounds great. And we see Idlib across the way trying to go to Trent, walk up to Trent. They're waving at each other like they're friends. They're so excited to see each other. And someone kind of moves Idlib away and like won't let him walk over there. And Idlib looks very stressed and then just walked off and we don't see where he goes.
Mm. Right. Idlib is in the know. Idlib knows this beach is not okay.
Knows. Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to find out why they want to sacrifice people to this god of aging.
Yeah, clearly it's how they make money. Somehow.
Clearly it's how they make money.
It's the only reason I can imagine. It's
the only reason anyone does anything, to be completely honest.
It's true. So they're loaded into a van driven by M. Night Shyamalan himself.
Oh, he always makes a little cameo.
He loves it.
So cute of M. Night Shyamalan.
It's so cute.
Fancies himself a little Alfred Hitchcock. Crystal and Charles and their daughter and grandma and dog are also loaded into this van. So they're all going to this beach and they drive away.
The dog, too, you said?
There's a dog, yeah.
Emily, your face. Emily just got very scared. The movie just went next level because there's a dog present.
Dogs age differently than humans, and I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, it's the other family's dog. And so they drive a while and they get to this kind of path in the forest, woods. What do you call when it's tropical? Forest, I guess.
Yeah.
Tropical forest.
A grove of trees, grove of palms, jungle.
Yeah, it's kind of a path in the jungle, and there's some little.
Are we geniuses? I think we might be very smart.
Very, very, very smart.
Okay.
There's like a fence that blocks off this path, and M. Night Shyamalan starts unloading these picnic baskets that they have provided for the families. Like, here's your stuff to have a nice beach day. And there's tons of food in it. And they're like, oh my God, this is so much stuff. And he's like, yeah, like we like to just don't want anybody going hungry. And, so it gives him kind of a lot of stuff. And Charles asks him, can you help us with this? Like, this is so much stuff. And he's like, oh, unfortunately, I got to get back. Like, but it's just right there. It's not far at all. You'll just walk through this slot canyon and it's right on the other side. M. Night Shyamalan gets in the van, leaves. They carry all their stuff through this slot canyon and emerge the other side onto a beautiful beach. That's all empty except for the man that we saw there the night before. Not the woman. Mm. Mm. And he is just sitting by himself, kind of staring off into space. And so they set up on their beach, they set up their umbrellas and their towels and whatnot. And Maddox says to her mom, says to Prisca, noticing the man, she's like, mom, that's Midsize Sedan, which is the funniest character name. And I guess he is some sort of rapper that she knows.
I thought she saw him like driving
Same.
In a midsize
that's
sedan,
kind of what I thought at first as well, but they ask him later what his name is and he's like, I'm Midsize Sedan.
That's really funny. That's actually great. I love it.
It's very funny. And you can see that Maddox is a fan and she's kind of like stressed about it. And She's like, I got to go talk to him. She's like, yeah, like, we'll talk to him in a bit. Like, let's get up set up first. And the kids kind of all go off together. There's Maddox and Trent, but also Kara, the other daughter, who seems to be about Trent's age, also about six. And they're playing tag, running around, and they stumble upon a bunch of buried things near the, like, on a corner of this beach. It's rusted silverware from previous picnic baskets, some kind of dolls, sunglasses. They're just discovering a bunch of buried stuff in the sand. And they think it's cool, like, buried treasure. Like, oh, look at all this stuff. And Prisca and Guy just kind of don't really take much notice of it. They're like, okay, well, be careful. Like, don't, you know, cut yourself on any of the knives or whatever. And then the kids start playing hide and seek. And Trent swims and hides in the water, kind of behind a, in like a little enclave. It's like the whole beach is a big cove, and there's high rock walls everywhere that kind of go in and out. So you can, he's hiding behind one of the rock walls in the water. And as he is like treading water, we see a blonde head of hair floating behind him and bump into him. He starts screaming. The parents run over and pull out a corpse of the woman we saw from the night before. And Midsize Sedan obviously recognizes her as the woman he was with the night before. He's being weird, like, especially knowing what we know as an audience. It's like, why isn't this guy like immediately saying everything to this family?
Yeah.
And freaking out that this woman disappeared last night, and now the next day he's just kind of sitting there.
Still here, yeah, hanging out.
So he's a little weird, but he seems to be in shock, maybe.
And her corpse just looks like how she looked. Like, she hasn't, like, aged or anything like that. She just looks the same.
Right.
Okay.
And so they pull her out of the water, and Charles he's the older doctor guy, is like super suspicious of Midsize Sedan. He's like, who are you? What the fuck's going on?
Yeah, of course.
And Guy and Prisca are very much trying to lower tensions and be like, okay, we don't know, like, relax, like, let's figure this out. Like, we don't need to start screaming at each other. We need to just, like, stay calm. And Midsize Sedan's nose is bleeding, like, pouring blood pretty consistently. And they're like, Charles says, clearly they, like, got in a fight. He hit her. She must have hit him back. And that's why his nose is bleeding. And Midsize Sedan says, my nose has been bleeding for 8 hours. Like, it won't stop bleeding. Like, I don't know what's going on. And at that, they cover the body with a towel so the kids can't see. And at that moment, the couple that the woman had a seizure, that couple arrives. Their names are Jaren and Patricia. And the family runs up to them, says, oh, good, good, good. Is the van driver still here? Like, we need to go back to the hotel. Something bad has happened, and show them the body quickly. They're all like, oh, fuck. Okay. Like, I think he left already, but let's try to go back. And Jaren starts walking back through the slot canyon. It's like, I'll run back, see if I can get him. He gets about 20 feet into the slot canyon, and then something happens where it seems like he's getting a pounding headache, kind of like a loud noise is happening. He grabs his head and kind of falls to his knees in pain, and then blacks out and comes back to right at the entrance back on the beach. And everyone's standing over him saying, what happened? What happened? You stumbled out, like, screaming in pain. And he's like, I don't know. It felt like I was like very deep underwater, like there was pressure on my head. I blacked out. And at that moment, Crystal yells from the other side of the beach, Charles, something's wrong with your mom. And they run over to Charles's mom. And she is, I can't really remember what she kind of says something to him, like, it's going to be okay. And she dies. She just dies. And then they say something's happening to the dog. Dog dies. So the mom and the dog died immediately. Oh, no. And
he's been through 7 times the amount of time that they've been through.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a great point.
And so Charles, Crystal, and Guy and Prisca are kind of standing over the bodies, trying to figure out what to do there. That Jaren and Patricia are left to kind of watch the kids and keep them away from the mounting amount of dead bodies on the beach. And Jaren and Patricia say, oh, how old are you guys? Actually, let me guess. Like, I'm so good at guessing kids' ages, which is funny. Just there's all these moments that are just like, you roll your eyes like, okay. Such a device. But he's like, you're 6 and you're 11. Or no, sorry. He says, you're 11 and you're 16. And they're like, no, we're 6 and 11. And he's like, no. Like, no, you're not. Like, you're 11 and 16, right? Like, how old are you really? And the camera reveals that they are not. Yes, they are now about 11 and 16. They have aged and.
But they're not the actors yet of the oldest version. Okay.
No. And. And I will say the casting is pretty good because they have to cast quite a few different ages for these kids. And at this moment, Charles starts acting very unhinged all of a sudden, and we're not quite sure why. After seeing his mom die, he kind of walks over to mid-size sedan with a knife and slices mid-size sedan's face. And everyone turns around like, whoa, what the fuck? What are you doing? And Charles looks kind of out of it and as if he doesn't know what he just did. And mid-sized sedan is holding his hand over his face like, man, that's fucking assault. Like, you're going to go to jail for this. Jail's going to be the least of anybody's problems.
Yeah, seriously.
And oh, jail.
You wish.
There's no jail in hell.
Jail sounds great.
I wish I could go to jail.
Yeah. And so he's holding his face and Guy says, let me see. And he takes his hand off and it's a healed scar. Which is kind of cool. And so they're all.
Time has sped
up. They're stressed. And then at this moment, Guy and Prisca are like, where are the kids? Where are the kids? And see that their kids have grown. They're not the same kids they were 20 minutes ago. And Maddox is like spilling out of her bathing suit, which is like a sad little detail. And her mom's like, I have a spare bathing suit in my bag. Like, you need to go change because she has boobs now. And so they're like, okay, something is very wrong on this beach. We need to get the fuck off this beach. Charles and Guy again start walking down the slot canyon. Same thing happens. Their head starts pounding and they wake back up on the beach. And Jaren says, okay, 3 people now have blacked out as they try to leave. Something's going on. And Patricia says, I'm a psychologist. Maybe we're having some sort of shared delusion. That's a thing that can happen when everyone's under stress. Like, everyone tell me your medical history and why you're here. And Crystal says that Charles has been under a lot of stress as a doctor. His job's very stressful, and so they just needed some time. And we can see Charles get very annoyed that she's saying this, and he's like, shh, like, none of that's our business. And she's like, I won't say anything else. Like, I'm not saying anything else. Like, that's all I'll say. Like, he's just been under a lot of stress. And Prisca says, we wanted to come as a family, and they're holding stuff back. They don't want to be like, I have a tumor and we're getting divorced. They're not really being forthcoming with their information. But then I think mid-sized sedan says, I came here last night with that girl we just met the night before and bonded because she had cancer and I have been just recently diagnosed with a rare blood disease where my blood can't clot, which is perhaps why his nose won't stop bleeding. And Prisca says that they just stumbled upon this resort through some sort of ad they responded to, like a sweepstakes maybe, and it all happened very fast, and the resort basically organized everything for them, booked their flights and whatnot. So they're like, someone's doing this to us, and they look up at the top of the cliff, and there's some sort of light coming from it, like maybe a light shining on them, maybe the reflection of a camera, something like that. They think that there's somebody up there watching them. And they realize that the hotel manager made them all leave their passports in their rooms. Because he said, like, oh, I don't want you to lose your passports on the beach. And they kind of put together that they'll be able to take their stuff back to their houses and make it look like they had never left so that they could maybe just be missing persons. And as they're all kind of gathered together, Prisca starts getting woozy. She's like, I don't feel good. She collapses. And at this point, Guy reveals she has a tumor and it's about 3 centimeters. And Charles comes up to look at her. He is a doctor. And he's like, this is not 3 centimeters, this is the size of a baseball. And we look, and the tumor is pretty big. And it seems to be getting bigger by the minute.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Where is
it's
it?
It's on her hip, like low abdomen. And she is unconscious. And Charles says, we have to operate on her. Is that okay? Like, that's your... Guy, are you okay with that? He's like, I don't want to make this decision, but like, yeah, it's like, I guess we have to. And they get a knife, slice into her abdomen and make like a big, like 5-inch incision. And it just immediately heals back up. And they're like, fuck. And they're like, we have to all hold it open. And so they
again
slice. And he's just, and this is the part where I guess I'm just gross, but I wish that it was rated R, because they just don't, this is all basically played on all of their faces. And so you just, aside from the first like incision, which they do show, but they don't show anyone's hands in it, which I wish they did. But they.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's you being gross. I think it's like, hey, if you're going to fucking do it, do it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're like, we're all going to hold this woman's body open while the tumor, it's like, fucking do it.
Because they're like saying things, they're describing things verbally that I'm like, just fucking show it. Like, they're like, the skin is healing around our fingers. And I'm like, show it.
This is the thing with M. Night Shyamalan movies. I feel like Split was R, but I feel like most of them are PG-13.
Right, he's trying to get that. He's trying to get that PG-13 money.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. And for good reason.
For good reason.
Because it works in his favor.
But so by the time they are actually able to make a large enough incision, the tumor is the size of a cantaloupe. And they do show them lifting it out, and it is pretty gross.
Oh.
But they don't even have to sew her back up. It just closes up and heals on its own. So that's one benefit of the surgery happening here, is that it just heals. She wakes up and she feels fine.
Wow. Okay.
So pretty lucky.
Yeah. I love this beach.
Oh, and something happens while Charles is doing the surgery is he says, like mid-surgery, he says, there's a movie starring Jack Nicholson and Marlon Brando. What is the name of that movie? What's the name of that movie? And Crystal, his wife, is kind of like, okay, can we focus here? And he won't stop saying it. He like says it over.
He's
like,
getting dementia.
Keeps like pausing and is like, what's the name of that movie? What's the name of that movie? So they get that out. They're all kind of recovering. Mid-sized sedan walks back over to the girl, the dead girl covered with the towel, lifts it up. It's just bones now. And he screams, calls everyone over. They're like, what the fuck? How long would it take to do that? And Prisca works at a museum. And so she's like, I don't totally know, but I think it would usually take about 7 years for a body to decompose. And they're like, she just died. And so they start kind of doing some math They all have like convenient jobs for this.
I love a movie with masks.
And they realize that they're aging about 2 years per hour. And the kids, it's obviously showing much more dramatically because they are going through puberty and a lot of changes. But an adult aging 2 years isn't necessarily a visible change. So for the older, for the grandma and the kids, it's obviously more noticeable. But the rest of them, they're all aging at the same rate. It's just less visible on the middle-aged people.
Got it. Okay. That answers that question, because I didn't know if it was faster for the children. No,
it's same speed. But so, okay, so 2 years per hour means...
So how long have they fucking been on this beach? That's a long day.
I know, they've already been there for a while.
The kids have aged 5 years apiece.
So a couple hours.
Two and a half hours?
Yeah.
All right, I guess that's not that long.
It's a long day on the beach. I can't be on the beach. Longer than 45 minutes.
So, yeah, they basically realize that 24 hours is 48 years. And so they have like a day-ish to get off this beach.
Oh, fuck.
Before okay, they die.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's too much.
And in all of this commotion, they've been distracted. And we look over. Maddox is now an adult woman. Kara and Trent are now teenagers. So they're look about 17 and she's probably 20. 122.
So now are they the actors?
Yes, now they're Alex Wolff, Eliza Scanlon, and Thomasin McKenzie. Yes, and so your other question is that it is funny that they're still kind of acting like kids. And Alex Wolff specifically, well, no, I guess all of them. I think they all actually do a pretty good performances where they're childlike, but not like ridiculous. Like, it's not like silly. It's a little silly, but I think they do a good job. And some things will happen in a bit that'll kind of also help explain it. But this is also when Prisca notices Guy is getting wrinkles, which how Gael Garcia Bernal didn't have wrinkles before is crazy.
Lucky.
I have wrinkles.
Yeah, me too.
Then we hear Crystal start screaming on the other side of the beach, and we see Charles murdering mid-sized sedan, stabbing him over and over and over in the chest, like muttering to himself, like, you're like dangerous. Like, I don't know. Charles is clearly becoming more and more unhinged. Everyone nervously approaches him and are trying to get this knife away from him. And they eventually do. And he kind of is shaking and sits down and is muttering to himself, kind of goes and sits in the corner of the beach by himself. They're all say, we need to keep an eye on him. We've got the knife away from him. And,
is mid-sized sedan dead?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He stabbed him. He stabbed him many times.
Yeah. Well, then I would say they definitely do need to keep an eye on this man that just murdered someone else.
Let's keep an eye on him. At the very least, let's keep an eye on him.
The adults are kind of grouped together. They send the kids to, I don't know where Maddox goes, but Kara and Trent go in a little tent by themselves. And they're laying, talking to each other, and kind of realizing that... Or one of them says, like, our bodies are changing, but, like, my mind is changing, too. Like, I feel different, seemingly getting less childlike mentally as well. Like, they are also emotionally aging.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
They're cognizant of that they're going to miss prom, that they're going to miss out on these other things. They're saying this isn't fair. They're sounding like teenagers.
That makes sense, because it sounds like Charles has some kind of brain.
Yeah.
Like disease, and so it's obviously affecting your brain as well.
Which I think is the way to the I'm glad that it is this way and that they're not just acting like six-year-olds. They do initially at first just to kind of bridge that gap and then quickly kind of start acting their own age, but still with they're just totally confused and scared, and so but they're huddled together in this little tent and, you know, they're starting to get horny.
I just figured out how she gets pregnant. I just figured it out.
Oh boy.
And she
Oh god, and if two years is 1 hour, 9 months is fast.
Really fast.
All right, no, sorry, Sammy, you tell it. I'm just freaked out.
And so there you see them kind of like, oh, like I'm feeling weird, and they're kind of touching each other's faces, and we're like, oh boy.
Oh no.
And then we go back to the group of adults. Jaren is saying, who's the strongest swimmer? Does anyone feel like they could swim out of this cove? That's about 100 meters or so, and then an unknown length to wherever the next shore is. Like, basically, we have to get out of this cove, and then who knows how much longer it is the other way. Nobody's jumping to volunteer for this, but he's just saying, you know, we're spitballing here. There, we've got to get off this fucking island, and or off this beach, and then they're like, okay, where are the kids? And they go walking back to the direction of the tent. And the way this is filmed is really cool. The camera's just panning back and forth. And so we're on the parents, and we see kind of all of their facial expressions as they see the kids emerge from the tent and pan over. And we see she's fully looks to be 5 months pregnant. And
oh my god,
they're holding hands, and everyone is just in such shock. And but they're doing the math real quick, and like there's no time to be like, you guys had sex. They're just very quickly this is a medical issue. And camera's just like panning.
Oh my god.
As someone who just gave birth, I would like to say I am so glad it didn't happen to me in this context.
This certainly
really dodged a bullet.
This certainly seems worse than regular birth.
So
it's panning back and forth. Basically, each time the camera gets to Kara, she is more pregnant. They lay her down. They're like, it's happening now. Her stomach is growing in front of her eyes. She is screaming in panic. She calls to her mom, "Mom, I'm scared." Her mom is so freaked out that her mom runs away. Her mom, by the way, is like 20 something, right? And so it's like definitely not prepared for this, and just kind of runs away in shock and collapses. And we see Trent freaking out, and Guy holding Trent, trying to calm him down. Trent yells, I'm going to marry her.
Oh, that's
buddy,
so sad.
That ain't the concern. Buddy, we don't care.
That's really cute, though.
It was cute. I liked that little touch. And while the camera is on Trent, we hear the baby cry. And then we hear the baby stop crying, and the camera pans back over. Baby is wrapped in a towel. Baby has died. And someone says the baby died from lack of attention. The baby was set down for a minute and it died, because a minute is, I guess, I don't know. I can't do that fast of math.
Oh, that's so sad. That is so sad. I don't like that.
I knew you wouldn't.
Why is there a dead baby? Why is there a dead baby in every movie we do, you guys?
We knew this baby's life wasn't going to be good regardless.
Yeah, honestly, for them, I feel like it's maybe lucky that now they don't have another baby, instant teen, like that.
I would have been interesting to see a baby progress through all the stages, though. That would have been interesting.
They were like, we can't fucking do that.
But lack of attention. Wow, that makes me so sad.
Sorry, Henley.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Are they all starving? That just reminds me, like, should they be eating?
Yes, okay,
constantly?
So I forgot to mention, but yeah, remember how
they gave them
tons and tons of food. And so, yes, they are eating.
They are starving.
And especially, yes, the teenagers are eating the most. They're eating a lot.
I said it before, I'll say it again. I like this beach.
Lots of food. Lots of food. That's a plus. I don't hate it. That's a plus for sure. And it started to get dark, and Patricia realizes she hasn't had a seizure all day, which, by the way that time works, should be impossible, because she has them regularly. And Kara and Trent are crying over the loss of their baby. God, I'm sorry, Henley, who is now just bones, a little blanket full of bones.
Oh, my God.
That's so sad. And I hate it.
Charles sees Crystal and says, like, he's like disgusted by her. He's like, go put some makeup on. And we see Crystal now has wrinkles as well. And
go put some makeup on.
He's an asshole. Oh, he's bad.
Right. Well, Charles is also devolving into.
He did already murder someone. This is, you know, arguably worse. Mm-hmm. I feel like also Rufus Sewell's like incapable. Like he always plays an asshole.
Yes.
Like he just.
Yeah, he does.
Just
he does.
Looks like a fucking asshole.
He's great at it.
He's scary and bad.
He's really good at it. I saw him at Little Dom's once, but I didn't talk to him, so I can't confirm or deny if he is an asshole in real life.
Probably
not.
Nice.
I feel like usually when people play assholes all the time, they're not actually assholes, but
yeah,
who knows?
And so Crystal is mortified, runs and hides in one of, like, there's kind of like some cavey type areas where the rock goes in. And so she's just kind of run away from everybody. Kara and Trent bury their baby, and Kara kind of hits a breaking point and starts trying to climb the rock wall, which is just absolutely vertical. It's a 90 degree angle of rock. And she just starts climbing. And Trent is screaming at her to get down, to stop, because he's like, you're going to black out when you're climbing, because anytime anyone gets to a certain point of trying to leave, they black out. And sure enough, she gets really, really high, blacks out, and falls to her death.
Oh.
Prisca and Maddox are on a different part of the beach, and they get in a fight, and Prisca or Maddox confronts her basically about the divorce and says, you're getting a divorce, right? Like, you wouldn't tell us, but you're getting a divorce. And Prisca says, yes, we are. I'm sorry. And Maddox says, is there somebody else? And Prisca says, yes, there is. I'm really sorry. And Maddox is very angry and about to storm off and says, I just need some time. Just another funny line. And I think Prisca might even say, we don't have any time.
Classic.
But Maddox then goes into the water for a swim to clear her mind. After Kara fell, Jaren went to swim out. He was like, okay, I'm gonna try to swim out and get help. Maddox goes into the water. Jaren's body floats up. Jaren died. Because if you black out swimming, you're gonna drown.
Really bad situation.
Yeah.
Don't want to be swimming.
Not as bad as on top of a cliff, actually, but
yeah.
Still pretty bad.
The result is the same. And so now it's really getting dark, and back on the beach, Patricia has seemingly a bunch of seizures at once. Like, all of the seizures that had been put off, it just has one grand mal seizure.
Weird.
And dies.
Fucking hell.
And as they are trying to tend to her or holding her as she has just died, Guy's vision starts blurring completely, and he can't see. He's holding her and he can't see, and he's kind of looking around, and everything's really, really blurry and fading and like getting darker. And we see Prisca again, the camera like panning side to side, like with her face as it looks like she's listening, and she covers one ear and everything goes quiet. So she has lost hearing in one of her ears and is losing hearing in her other ear.
Are they looking like visibly older? Is everyone looking like, does Alex Wolf age more and stuff like that?
Kind of subtly get more wrinkles and gray hair. Not Alex Wolf and Thomas and McKenzie yet. They're maybe
like
get like stubble or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But Guy and Prisca, yes, are looking older. So they're all sitting on the beach. It's nighttime now. And
they're the only ones left. No, Charles is still alive.
Charles and Crystal are still alive. And we hear Charles muttering to himself again and hear the sound of a knife, like a metal sound. And Guy looks over and can just see like a shape moving towards him. And he turns to Prisca to say, "What is that? What is that?" And she can't hear him. And so they're just like sitting there as Charles approaches with the knife and starts just slicing them with a knife. And as he's flinging the knife at them, slicing, Guy puts his arms up to defend himself, getting sliced across the arms, and the wounds are just immediately healing. So he is able to just be like sliced over and over and using his arms as a shield and is staying somewhat safe because he's just healing so quickly. And at one point, Prisca puts herself over Guy as a shield and gets slices all over her back. And so her shirt's all torn up. But again, it's just healing and healing. She yells at the kids to go hide. So they go into another little rock crevice.
No, it's four against one. Fucking tackle this old fucker.
And they're trying. Yeah. I don't know. They're just, they don't have any weapon. And so I don't know. Yeah, they should tackle him. But so they run to hide and they run into Crystal, who is in the like a little cave, basically. And they have a book of matches and they're lighting it to try to see her. And she's like, "Don't look at me. Don't look at me."
Oh, my God.
And we see her and she has like scoliosis, maybe. We knew earlier that she had a calcium deficiency. And so her bones are growing not the right way. And so she's looks like has a hunchback. And also wrinkles, and obviously only cares about her looks. So she's very, just quite really upset. Yeah. And screaming at them, don't look at me. And she picks up a big rock and looks like she's maybe going to throw it at them, but instead throws it on herself as a way to maybe try to kill herself. But she basically just drops a heavy rock on her shoulder, dislocates it, and it immediately heals out of place.
So
her arm is stuck at this very unsettling angle, and she starts like running at them. This part's pretty silly, but also interesting. It's a fun, I guess. It's fun. I don't know. It's something. It's not like anything else I've seen.
Forest, woods, it's jungle.
And they are scared of her. She's freaking out and chases them through this small little rock tunnel. But she's flailing around, freaking out. And each time she hits the wall, she's like breaking a limb. And it's healing wrong. And so she, I don't know, maybe she's trying to kill herself in this way of just like she's realized that this is all she can do. The only way she can hurt herself. But so she's basically flinging herself against the walls over and over. And we see her arms and legs just basically become zigzag broken at every spot. And she turns up like, scrunches up into a little like spider and eventually dies that way. So they watch her kill herself in this very, very crazy way.
What? Okay. All right. Guess you can die that way. I don't know.
Eventually,
like, you just break
probably
your bones.
Like smush your organs can't breathe. Or, I don't know.
Yeah. And then we see back on the beach, Prisca returns to Guy, who is still getting sliced, and she slices Charles on the arm, and we zoom in on the cut and it's not healing and it's just pouring more blood, and he's looking at it. Everyone kind of stops thinking, why isn't this healing? And she shows her knife is one of the rusted knives that was already on the beach from a previous picnic basket. And she says rust acts like poison in the bloodstream. And we see it basically just spread this dark color under his skin, like he's getting blood poisoning. And his skin turns black under his skin and it spreads through his whole body until he dies. It basically overcomes him. It's pretty gross. He's like, looks like his skin is burning from the inside. It looks bad.
Awful.
Ew.
So he dies. So now we are just the family of four. And they sit together on the beach.
It's fully nighttime.
It's fully nighttime. And Guy and Prisca are clearly aging a lot. They're old now. And one is deaf. One is basically blind. And they're just kind of holding each other and with their kids next to them. And at some point he says, I saw your text messages and I should have said something. I'm such a coward. I thought if I ignored it, it would go away. And I'm sorry that you felt that was your only escape or something like that. Like I should have been better to you. And she says she's sorry too. And then they're silent for a moment. And then he looks at her like he can't remember what they were just talking about. And he says, were we just fighting about something? Were we just having an argument? She says, yeah, we were, but I'm not mad. And he's like, oh, I'm not mad either. And then they both just die in each other's arms.
Oh, wow.
Right next to their children. Sad. And then the sun comes up the next morning and Maddox and Trent are new actors now. They look to be in their 40s or 50s. And there's some line in here where Trent says, feels like just yesterday we were kids. Just very silly. And
boo.
Unnecessary. But it's like aware that it's silly, at least. Like I feel like he's trying to make a joke. But so they look weary. Worse for wear, like they've kind of given up a bit. They don't look scared anymore. They're just kind of resolved to, I guess we're going to die here pretty soon too. We've tried all the exits. Basically, we've run out of options here. So they're kind of walking around the beach, arm in arm, like I said, it would be you and me to the end. And like I've always got your back. And like, we'll go through this together. And they find a notebook on the beach and open it. And it has basically a bunch of names and ages and addresses of people who we assume were the last group of people on this beach that this happened to. And whoever was here with this notebook last was writing down kind of their theory of what was happening. And they say it's something to do with the magnetism of the rocks. Obviously, there's going to be no real science behind this, so I'm not even really going to try to explain it, but something to do with magnets and rocks. And they like decide like if we had some sort of metal tube that we could go out of, it might block the magnetism for whatever it's doing as people have been trying to escape. And they're like, where the fuck are we gonna, like, there's no metal tube around here. And they're like, yeah, like it's hopeless, like it's not gonna happen. And so they sit back down and Trent says, you want to build a sandcastle? And she's like, yeah. And so they start building a little sandcastle and they're just kind of enjoying their time together, reflecting on their lives, saying like, he's talking about Idlib being like, Idlib and I, we were supposed to have ice cream today. And says, he's like, it's so funny. We wrote those notes to each other in code, like we thought we were spies. And he's like, actually, he wrote me another note. I forgot to ever decode it. And she's like, do it now.
Oh, God.
And he's like, okay.
Here we go. Here we go. Here it is.
So it pulls it out, decodes it, and it says, "My uncle doesn't like the coral." And they're both staring at it. And then they look out to the water, and there's basically a coral reef out a ways into the water. And they're like, okay, well, that maybe there's some sort of answer there. They start swimming out to it and see that there's, it's basically like an underwater tunnel through this coral reef. So they start swimming through it, and then Maddox's shirt gets caught on coral, and they can't free it. They can't free it. And the coral is very stressful too, because you just always think of like bumping into coral as like, it just looks so painful. So, and this is, yeah, so bad. Sharp. And this is just like wall to wall. They're just surrounded by coral, and her shirt gets caught. They can't get out. And then we see M. Night Shyamalan watching them from atop the cliff with binoculars. He's got a little laptop set up. He's watches for a bit, watches, and then calls someone on his cell phone, says they're dead. They died. They drowned. So, experiment 73, all subjects dead. And then goes back to the resort, which is, I guess, in the back area, just entirely a lab. Everybody from the resort in lab coats doing little tests. We got beakers. We got
what?
A bunch of shit happening.
Okay.
And we see the resort manager saying, "Moment of silence for test subject group 73. Everyone bows their head in silence. He says, "Thank you. We had a really great success with this. Test subject so-and-so, Patricia, what's her name, had no seizure for 8.5 hours, which translates to, I don't know, however many years in
17 years.
And he's like, so he's like, so the medication that we gave her was a success and cured her seizures for the amount of time, for the half-life of the medication or whatever it is. And we learn that they're running medical experiments. Basically, they can test medicine for a lifetime on people in a day. So they can find out the efficacy of drugs much more quickly than they would if they were running regular drug trials. And so they're like, this is a huge success. We've basically cured epilepsy. And there's some talk of like, I think we should have the neurological patients separate from physical patients in the future. Like mixing those is a little bad.
Killed a few that maybe shouldn't. We would have seen the results. Mm-hmm.
Do it on rats. Why are we doing this on humans? Maybe we should think about that first.
It's silly.
Too.
And I mean, of course, anytime there's a big reveal, it's just like, it's not going to be good. Like, there's no way to, I feel like, have had this ending be good other than just keeping it vague, keeping it ambiguous. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Don't answer my questions, because they're going to be stupid answers. But anyway, so yeah, we find out that it's just a big, like, medical experiment. And
okay.
Then sure. We see the hotel manager goes back to the main area of the resort. We see Idlib looking really sad, and he says to him, like, next time, just, you can play with the kids that I tell you to play with. Like, I told you not to play with that boy. Like, go play with those kids over there. Those kids are fine. So there's enough of a front at this resort that there are guests that don't come here and die.
Mm-hmm.
And we see on the beach the people that they had been speaking to, that Idlib and Trent had gone up to and ask their names and occupations. And we see someone come up to one of the men and say, "Hey, you're a cop, right?" And hand the notebook that we saw them find on the beach. And so we see that Maddox and Trent did in fact survive. It cuts back to them freeing themselves from the coral tunnel and coming out the other side. And that was the way that they escaped. And I guess M. Night Shyamalan just didn't watch for long enough. And they did, in fact, come out. It's just very funny to not be like, I'm going to watch this spot for, you know, 15 minutes instead of three. So they did, they came out and they hand the, turn in this journal with all these names to the cop. And we see police arriving and we see the cop, it's kind of a montage-y type thing. We see the cop on the phone confirming that these are in fact all missing persons and calling in police. And we see Maddox and Trent confront the hotel manager and all of them look like the jig is up and everyone's, all the employees are looking very stressed, like, oh fuck. And he sees Idlib, Trent and Idlib reunite, and Idlib kind of takes a moment and then recognizes him. His 6-year-old friend is now in his 50s. And they get taken out on a, like, lifted out in like a helicopter, like they're leaving the resort. It's the cop and Maddox and Trent, and they're taking them to their aunt's house, and they, he says, like, how's your aunt taking this? And Trent says, how would you take it if your 6 and 11 year old niece and nephew were 50, in their 50s in a day? And that's like the last line of the movie, and it ends with them like, yeah, that'd be that'd be pretty weird. And they're all just kind of like nod at each other like, yeah, it's weird. And that's the end.
Okay.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Honestly, great. All of it to perfectly tracks with what that's I
feel like it
be.
Was exactly what I wanted. It's pretty fun. It's like silly. It's scary. There's some parts that are genuinely touch on very real fears and real things that are dark and sad in life. And it's funny and fucking weird, and there's no other movie like it. I had a great time.
It's a great concept. I'm like actually surprised it hadn't been done. I mean, it would be harder to do before like CGI was better, you know, where it is now. But yeah, whatever. Great. Perfect. Love it. Love it. Didn't need to be anything more than what it was.
You go in with those M. Night Shyamalan expectations and you're going to have a great time.
Wait, is it Shyamalan? Is it Shyamalan? Shyamalan? Is it Shyamalan?
I don't
Shyamalan.
Know. I don't know.
I've been saying Shyamalan.
Shyamalan, Shyamalan. You say Shyamalan, I can only say Shyamalan.
I always heard Shyamalan, but I don't know.
I think Shyamalan. I think that's right.
Probably right.
Wait, what'd you say before Sammy? Oh, Bullock. Sandra Bullock. Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
I feel like now I know it for sure because of Inside Bo Burnham, there's a song that references Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock in the blind side. Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock. So.
Bullock. Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock.
Wow. Thank you for doing this for us. Sammy, I desperately needed to know what happened, and this is the perfect way to consume that sweet, sweet content.
Yeah, I'd say M. Night Shyamalan movies are perfect for this type of thing, because you just want to know what happens. Yeah. You just
tell me what the deal is.
Tell me what the dealio is.
And Henley, you made it.
I made it. Woohoo! Now I'm going to go feed my baby.
Yay.
That's what I'm going to do.
It's an important thing.
Yeah, babies need feeding.
And babies need to be fed.
I'm going to go feed my baby, by which I mean I'm going to eat lunch for myself.
Me too.
Perfect. I love you guys so much. It was so
We're
good
so
to see
happy
your faces.
To have you back, we Henley. Love you so we love much. You so much. We love Silas so
I
much.
I miss you guys.
And
Silas. I love him. Love that little baby.
We love him so much.
And there's no voices in this. I thought maybe we could each do what we think our voice will sound like in 48 years.
Oh, terrifying. Terrifying.
Hello.
Like an old witch.
We'll all be great, lady. Emily, why don't you sign us off? I feel like yours was good.
This year. No, that was probably all be really sweet. from all of us here. From all of us here at Too Scary to Watch. Goodbye. Ow, that hurt.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you liked this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We would really appreciate that. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast or join our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast, where you will get bonus episodes, trailer reactions, and more. If not, we will see you here next week for our 100th episode, which will be the Amityville Horror, the 1979 version. So watch that before next week if you're interested, and we will talk to you then. Love you. Bye.